Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. James, a badly morning to you.
Badly morning to you too, Andrew. I'm having terrible nightmares at the moment. Uh-oh. I don't know if it's these badly mornings.
Right.
Last night, I dreamt that my dog had to go away. It did something bad or something. That was unclear in the dream.
Okay.
And we replaced it with a robot version of our dog. So it looked quite similar to our dog, but it was a robot.
Okay.
Go
on.
Well, there was good and bad to that situation. You know, behaviourally, it was a lot easier. You know, she followed orders with a lot more clarity and precision.
Right.
But I had this nagging feeling throughout of like, yeah, but ultimately you're just a robot, you know? It was like, it could be a sci-fi movie.
Well,
I
know what this is, basically. Do you want me to explain this to you?
Yes.
Okay, so I think this is yet more evidence that our consciousnesses exist on many planes. The parallel universe theory and all of that kind of stuff, where I think dreams allow us to cross over into those parallel universes. And what you have is an alternative version of the future. Or the present, as it could have been, had other things happened and led us to that point. So at some point, there will be robot dogs, and they'll look like dogs, and they'll act like dogs, but they will be soulless, mechanical creatures. And essentially, what has happened is that has all got jumbled up somewhere, come out in dream form, and there you go. That's it.
I tell you something that is really weird, is that I was I had this dream last night about robot dogs,
yeah,
right? And then this morning, I went out and I had the radio on in the car. And there was a thing about robot dogs on the radio, about saying that these scientists have created these creatures that have got four legs that are robots. And there's been this study where basically if people kick these robotic creatures with four legs, it upsets people. They get kind of emotionally invested because they look a bit like animals, even though they're clearly robots. That is a big coincidence.
It's not coincidence. It's just a melding.
It's just
different
me seeing the future. Yeah,
it's just everything sort of swirling around. Like the old glitch in the Matrix stuff. You know, things that happen and you've got no possible explanation for it other than just the universe is fucking with us. Like when you can't find your keys, you look for your keys, and then they're back where you look for them in the first place. You know,
that does happen a lot. Suspicious amount.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think that's what happened yesterday at Nottingham Forest? We got a really shit version of Arsenal from a parallel dimension. And for 90 minutes, this particular iteration of Arsenal that exists in another dimension usually was present and playing football or trying to play football and unsuccessfully not making it past the third round of the FA Cup.
Maybe they were all replaced with robots, Andrew.
Oh, that could be it. Someone should kick them and see how people feel about it.
I think they'd be quite pleased this morning.
Give them a good kicking.
Maybe that is what happened. Maybe that's what my dream was trying to explain to me.
Maybe so.
Who knows? But yes, it wasn't. Well, I'm glad we had this chat. Thanks for joining us on the Ask Us this week. Goodbye, everybody.
Yeah. In another dimension, this podcast goes on for about another 85 minutes. So, unfortunately, you're not in one of those.
Okay. Well, for the people who are still listening, shall we talk about the football?
We should talk about the football. Okay. I don't know where quite to start with this.
Because the beginning, Andrew.
The beginning is always a good point. How do I put this? Like, I want to talk about this game in isolation because, look, there have been positive things of late. We took positives from the defeat to Manchester City. I think there's a generosity towards the team and the manager and the way we've progressed since those opening three games of the season. You know, that everybody, I think most people understand. We're in the top four. That's good. So if, you know, I go a little bit off reservation in this particular podcast, it isn't to undermine or to suggest that none of that is true. It's really just to comment on what we saw yesterday. And I think you can do that. And I think you can be critical of that. If you're willing to give out praise when we've played well but haven't won a game, I also think it's fair to be critical of a game where we didn't play well and didn't win and also went out of a competition, which I think is an important competition. Whether people agree with that or not, I think it is. And it was very disappointing to go out at the first hurdle, if you like. So
definitely. With and all, something we're not accustomed to.
Yeah. Unless we're playing Nottingham Forest.
Unless we're playing Nottingham Forest, and we should remember that in future. We didn't speak enough about that before when the draw was made. Yeah. But I think it is worth talking about in some depth and in isolation too, because it's an isolated competition. You know, it's a different competition. Mm. It was a very different type of opponent and a very different group of players on the pitch.
Yeah.
So it was very much its own beast, but what a horrible beast.
It was a particularly loathsome beast. Yes, I agree. Mm. It was just not good. There was literally nothing positive to take from yesterday's game, which is, you know, it's hard to take because you're looking for, look, cup ties and the FA Cup, as we know, has often or have often thrown up surprises and shocks and difficulties and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
There have been shocks in the past. Arsenal have lost to lower league teams in the past. And it's been unpleasant and also horrible beasts. But yesterday, I think, was more about us than, let's say, Nottingham Forest really rising to the occasion. I don't want to take anything away from them. Fair play to them. They won. They're in the next round. Congratulations. And all of that kind of stuff. But I don't necessarily think that Forest were brilliant on the night. They didn't really cause us too many problems. I know Bernd Leno had a couple of saves to make, one from a free kick, one from open play. But really, we had more of the ball, we had more of the territory. It was really just about what we did or didn't do or failed to do in terms of our own performance. And then we got sucker punched with a late goal, which felt like it was coming and it was no less than we deserved, etc., etc. So I do think that the focus on this isn't really about the opposition as much as us.
Well, yeah, and inevitably on this show, but I think that is right in the context of the game. And actually, when they scored their goal, it was a real sort of course. I mean, that was the way they were going to score in the game. Arsenal essentially giving possession away when they're heavily committed up the field and paying the price on a counter-attack, and that's exactly what happened. You mentioned Bernd Leno making a couple of decent saves, and that's substantially more than we got their goalkeepers to do. So I think, you know, the fault is definitely with us.
Okay, so team lineup. I think it was inevitable that he was going to rotate a bit for this, and there were some enforced absences. Tomiyasu and Smith Rowe injured. We know that there are players who've gone away to AFCON. Granit Xhaka and Flo Balogun missing because of COVID. So it left us very, very light in midfield. And while I think, in general, Mikel Arteta spoke quite well about Maitland-Niles and the decision to allow him to go on loan, I do wonder a little bit about the timing of it. Like, did it have to happen before this game? Was it absolutely necessary? And look, I'm not saying Ainsley Maitland-Niles would have made the difference yesterday. I don't think even at his very, very best, he would have been capable of carrying the other nine outfield players who were, you know, really not that great. Nobody played particularly well. So it's not that. I just wonder about the messaging of that decision. When you're going into a game, there is, I don't know how to assess the risk of Granit Xhaka and COVID? Because we know back in September he wasn't vaccinated. We don't know if he is in the meantime. But even so, an injury or a suspension to Sambi or to Granit Xhaka was going to leave us very, very light in midfield. Charlie Patino is a very, very promising young player, 18 years of age. He will benefit from the experience of this, ultimately, because, you know, when you make your first, your full debut, you start your first game, you know, it's going to be a learning experience. So I don't want to be critical at all. And I'm making that very clear. I'm not being critical at all of Charlie Patino, but it just showed me that he's really not quite ready for this level yet. So would you have any concerns about that? Or do you think the Maitland-Niles deal, it was going to get done? And even with the players we had missing, even without Maitland-Niles, what we had on the pitch yesterday should have been capable of doing better and winning a game against Nottingham Forest, with all due respect to them.
Well, look, the 11 we put out could and should have won that game if they had played to their potential. That is, I think, certain. As for the midfield and the Maitland-Niles thing, I would be curious to know what the order of events was in terms of ratifying the Maitland-Niles to Roma move and discovering Granit Xhaka's COVID, diagnosis, you know.
Yeah.
I guess the wheels were probably in motion by that point anyway, but, you know, it is a substantial blow. The Maitland-Niles thing, I think, is very difficult to get your head round. It's curious, isn't it? Because at the end of the summer window, Maitland-Niles very publicly wanted to go to Everton, spoke about it on Instagram, you know, put that little statement out. And actually the attitude of, my perception is the attitude of most fans at that point was, let him go. He wants to play football. He's been held against his will. You know, because Arsenal were a target for everything at that point in time, it was like, this is awful. You know, he's an academy player. Let him go and fulfil his potential somewhere else.
Mm.
And then we get to January and it's like, keep him at all costs. That's football for you, I guess.
Well, but I suppose in the summer we knew we had more options in central midfield than we do right now. That would be...
We did, yeah. But we also had a situation with Thomas Partey having an unanticipated injury. Granit Xhaka being suspended, I think, at that point of time. So there was a logic to keeping him then. And I think it was the right decision. What I don't quite follow is letting him leave quite so early as we have in January. Yeah. Clearly, there must be an element to that that we don't understand in terms of a promise that was made, or he's made it very clear he doesn't want to play for Arsenal anymore. I mean, I'm speculating, but there's no logical reason to say we've got to do this deal as soon as the January window opens. It's bizarre.
Yeah. I mean, we did it. It seems to be for the benefit of the player, which on one hand you could say is commendable and admirable, that, you know, you're allowing a player to leave when realistically we know that his long-term future is not going to be at Arsenal. He's got an opportunity to go. You know, we're looking after him. But at the same time, it's come at a cost to us as a team, as a squad. It's benefited Maitland-Niles. It's benefited Roma. And it left us in a position last night where we had to play a player who's not ready. So, I'm curious about that decision-making too.
It's weird because we're supposed to talk about the game, but this is sort of a bigger conversation. But I think the trouble is that we are in the real crunch bite point in terms of when our depth is at its thinnest. And it's going to be like this. It was always going to be sort of this fortnight in which we were really tested because of AFCON, basically. And that's been exacerbated by Maitland-Niles and by
Xhaka.
But I think the thing is, like, everyone's sort of scrabbling now, like, we've got to get a body in. But my feeling is that sort of like the mistake has already been made, in that if we were going to get somebody in, it should have been at the start of this period. And maybe should have entailed not letting Maitland-Niles go. I sort of feel like now we're in this boat. I mean, we ain't getting a new player by Thursday. It's just not going to happen. So, yeah. So I suppose all I'm saying there is, I think a mistake has been made, but it's sort of already been made.
Yeah. I mean, he did talk. Sorry, go on.
Well, no, I just think I'm calling it a mistake, but I guess it's a decision.
It's a decision, but a decision can be a mistake. And much will depend then on Xhaka, whether he's fit and available for Thursday or for Sunday. You know, we don't quite know whether he's just got it and not feeling any symptoms, or if he's got symptoms, or if, for example, if he remains unvaccinated, perhaps he's more affected by it than somebody who would be or has been vaccinated, that kind of thing. It can take quite a bit out of players. I remember in the, you know, a few months back, Newcastle talking about how some of their players are absolutely banjaxed from having it because they just couldn't get back to the right level. This is a respiratory illness as well, you know, so there are consequences for that. So look, I do think it's a strange one. Arteta was very upfront in his press conference last week, wasn't he, on Friday, where he said, we are short, we are going to move. I think that was very publicly making it clear that he needs a player in that position. But I just wonder if you have doubts, or if you're unclear about when you can get that player in, is it wise to let somebody go who provides depth and some experience? Like Maitland-Niles is 24 now, so he's not an ingenue or anything like that. You know, when you do have a cup semi-final, and when you do have a North London derby, that decision-making will come into sharp focus if the squad is completely stretched, and not unnecessarily so, but you've contributed to that in a way that you probably didn't need to.
Yeah, and as much as Xhaka getting COVID, it's not something that, you know, you can necessarily anticipate. We know the spectre of COVID is there, right? Players are dropping out all over the place. So it could be Xhaka, it could be Lokonga, it could be anybody. And that's something that all squads have to contend with. And we knew that too.
Yeah, we've had a few, haven't we, you know, in the last few weeks.
Yeah, we've had Tomiyasu and a few others. So, and we've got others apart from Xhaka at the moment. Balogun, I think, was mentioned by the club. But yeah, it is hard to get your head around the Maitland-Niles thing. Would Roma really have said no deal if it's you know, like a fortnight later?
Yeah.
It does seem odd, a player who's been with the club since they were six, that you couldn't wring an extra 2 weeks out of them. Yeah, it's a curious one. As for Charlie Patino, I was obviously pleased for him to get the start. I've thought that you saw very clearly that it was his proper first team debut. And in some respects, I think an away game against a Championship side is tougher than a lot of other occasions for a player of his physicality and his youth. I don't think it... I want to try and phrase this right, but I don't think it will be the worst thing for him if it slightly dampens the hype.
I agree. Yeah.
You know, I agree. There's a lot of excitement, which is great. But because of the social media age that we live in and the access to under 23 games that we have now that we didn't have previously, I mean, Lord only knows what it would have been like for Cesc or Jack if they had had that degree of scrutiny in that period. But yeah, I just think the hype is... it's huge, and I don't know how helpful that is.
I agree. You know, I think the point you make about the physicality is a really important one, because he's 18 and he's tall and he's skinny and he's got a lot of filling out to do and a lot of bulking up to do as he gets older. And he's playing against, you know, big men, Championship midfielders, et cetera, et cetera. So,
he's a young 18, I think, to be honest.
Yeah, like he wouldn't get served in an off licence even if he had ID. The guy would just go, no, that's fake ID. You look about 12.
And that will come.
You know? Yeah,
that will come. Yeah, eventually he will get served.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He'll be able to get some beers at some point. But yeah, I again, look, it's not to be critical of him. I think he tried hard. But it's hard not to think that midfield or lack of real control or progression from midfield was a big part of why we didn't play particularly well. You know,
Definitely.
I think that was part of it. So
I think it was more than that, by the way. I just think that I think this game told us a bit about who's very important to the team in some ways. And if you think about when we play out from the back, the way we build the game, the importance of Gabrielle, of the two fullbacks, you know, particularly on the right-hand side, Tomiyasu, the two central midfield players. Because, in theory, our attack for the Forest game was pretty strong. You know, I know some people take or leave Eddie Nketiah, but the three behind, Odegaard, Saka, Martinelli, they are absolutely first-choice players and arguably some of our very best players, especially of late. I just felt the issue was kind of... I mean, those guys didn't have an amazing game. I thought Saka had some really good moments, but the issue was that those guys just weren't getting the ball in dangerous areas often enough. It was behind them.
Yeah, by the time they got the ball, Forest were there and organised and you know, making it tough for us to break it down. So it was how quickly we got the ball forward. I think, you know, that is a key point to this game, is the step down between some of the first team players and our backups or reserves or whatever you want to call them. I mean, Cedric and Tomiyasu, it's chalk and cheese. Rob Holding was really, really disappointing last night. I don't think he has really progressed as a footballer. You know, he's a decent backs to the wall defender. Stick him in his own box, tell him to make headers, tell him to hoof the ball clear, and I think he'll do a good job for a lot of teams. But when you're asking him to come into a side and not replicate per se, but stand in for Gabriel, who has been one of our most important players when it comes to touches on the ball, passes, week after week after week, he's near the top of the list. Holding's passing is just, you know, it's not great. It's speculative. By the time he takes the ball forward a couple of strides, Forrest back off, sit off. They know that he doesn't have the accuracy, he doesn't have the range to hurt them, and you just end up playing a lot of safety first kind of football, which is part of why it was difficult for us last night. Sambi, tidy on the ball, but didn't really do anything with it. We've mentioned Charlie Patino. So I think, even to an extent, Leno, where he made good saves when he needed to make good saves, but one of the important facets of our best play this season has been Ramsdale and how quickly he's got the ball forward, how well he passes it. Those long balls, which can find Martinelli on the left-hand side, as you saw against Manchester City, Leno doesn't have that either. So there was a lot missing from what we usually have. And it's not to make any excuses, because I do think those players, pretty much every single one of them on the pitch last night, was below par, was below what they're capable of. Whatever your expectation levels are for each individual, I still think some of them were below that. Like, I don't expect a great deal from Cedric, but what we saw last night was a lot worse than I thought. You know, so little things like even Saka, you know, who's much better than we saw last night. Nketiah, again, I don't have particularly high expectations for Eddie Nketiah, but when Bukayo Saka puts in a good cross and he's got a header from 6 yards out, I expect him to head it and not just kind of clatter it somewhere else with his nose.
Yeah, that was a bad miss. It reminded me of the Everton one in some respects, because Saka created the chance in similar fashion. I don't think Saka had his best game, but that chance he created, the one he put across the box that Lacazette almost got onto, if we were going to do anything in the game, I think it was going to come from him. I think the issue was getting him on the ball in the right areas often enough. But yeah, I think I agree with you. These players, the second choice ones, are worse than their first team counterparts. There's a reason they're second choice, but they're better than what they showed. They can all play better than this, and they were poor. And I agree with you about Rob Holding. Actually, I was really frustrated with the way he distributed from the back. There were a lot of times where he sort of carried the ball over the halfway line, and you could see him. When I watch Rob Holding at the moment, I almost feel like he's saying, kind of, look at me, I can do this.
Do this. I know what you mean.
It feels like he's showing, like, I can carry the ball, I can make forward passes, but he just doesn't do it as well as, say, a Gabriel or White when he's on his game. And I don't say that to be disparaging. I think he's got his uses within the squad, but it's certainly a drop-off. Leno, that's a good point about distribution. I hadn't thought of that. I mean, I actually think If we're learning about where we do and don't have depth, goalkeeper is somewhere where we do have some quality depth, I think, in that I think he's generally a very good goalkeeper. Nketiah is it's a bad miss, really bad miss. I have to say, I know he's come in for absolute pelters. I thought that watching the game in the stadium, my impression was that he was really trying to inject some urgency and trying to make things happen. And that the shots, I think he had 5 shots in the game, generally came from his own play. Like, and he was dribbling with the ball more than you're used to seeing him because nothing was really working. But he's there to take chances, and that was a massive, massive chance to win the game, and he missed it.
Yeah, he did have a good moment where I think he produced or won the ball in the box, created space for a good shot with his left foot, but smashed it over the bar. But yeah, look, it wasn't great. And I, you know, while we have all these questions about what's going to happen with our striker situation, you know, nights like last night and that miss, doesn't really do anything to convince me that. With 6 months left on his contract, we should be doing anything really to keep Eddie Nketiah, to be honest.
No.
I think, you know, he's had his chances. He scored some goals. He's a good lad, but it feels like it's time for him to go and for us to seriously address what is a key position and, I think, a very pressing matter for this team because, yeah, maybe it's a discussion for another day, but you don't get top four without a striker. I don't think you get top four without a striker who can score you goals, and we don't have one, really, at the moment. I know Lacazette's done good work, but doesn't really score goals. You don't know what's going on with Aubameyang. Eddie, we've just spoken about. So maybe that's a discussion for another day. I think we should move on and talk about one of the key moments of the first half, and that was the substitution of Nuno Tavares.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like your impression on it first, because I've watched the first half again. I put myself through it again this morning and watched that first half, which was not much fun, I have to say, because the football was pretty turgid from both sides. But I watched it and I watched him closely. So I'm curious as to your view, because you were there and we had a little bit of a chat about it offline. You were there and you weren't at all surprised by what happened.
No, actually, if you go back and look on Twitter, I think about 3-4 minutes before Nuno was subbed, I tweeted saying Arteta's going to make a change here. It was very much in the offing, and I did think it would be Nuno. So my feeling is that there was a bit of a focus issue, and that's complete guesswork on my part, but it felt to me like a couple of things didn't go right for him early on.
Mm-hmm.
And then from that point, not a great deal did. And I know the eye-catching thing would have been something like the back pass, you know, which went to Leno. I don't think that was so much the issue for Arteta. Nuno was playing directly in front of him. And some of that in-game coaching was going on. And there was clear frustration from Arteta and his assistant, not only with Nuno's use of the ball, but a lot of his off the ball work in terms of where he was playing, where he was standing, if he was getting back quickly enough. And Kieran Tierney was the first Arsenal player sent out to warm up.
Mm.
And he sprinted out there in his shorts and T-shirt, as usual. Mm. And I did sort of see it coming. And I think they just weren't happy. It felt like he wasn't doing the work that had been prepared, you know?
Yeah.
But I know that you had a different perception when you rewatched the game.
When I rewatched it, like I'm not here to say he was good or anything like that. But I made some notes here. So 1 minute 39, the ball runs under his foot, goes out for a throw-in.
Yeah.
Mistake, you know, but nothing particularly.
I remember it, yeah.
Hugely. 6 minutes 30, won a free kick high up the pitch and then picked up the ball after the delivery came in. Ben White had a shot with his left foot. 7 minutes 10, he lost the ball on halfway but got back in, chased back. Because I thought it might be that. I thought it might be, well, he's lost the ball and he hasn't shown enough effort to get back in. I didn't see that, not once. 10 minutes 46 was the bad back pass to Leno. 13:22, he won a tackle. 21:45, I'm just, you know, I'm only using moments here where he sort of did something that was out of the ordinary or whatever. 21:45, he made a really good interception, burst forward, got fouled, he got an arm in the face, and the referee played on.
Yeah, I remember that.
26 minutes, a right-footed cross. 27 minutes, which is maybe where I think something started happening. He lost the ball in the inside left position halfway up the pitch, but chased all the way back. And then when the ball fell to him, I think it was Lokonga who intercepted a low cross. He booted it clear, and the ball came back in, and he was beaten by a man who crossed it. Cedric headed behind for a corner.
Mm-hmm.
28:55, he's just outside the D in the attacking half. Eddie Nketiah has the ball out wide. Tavares runs into the box. Nketiah has a left-footed shot which goes wide. I think it deflected wide. So maybe that was part of it. It was like where he was playing. Should he be, as the left-back, that high up the pitch? But I remember, what was it? Was it the Newcastle game when Bukayo Saka scored a really good goal? It was a nice pass from Tavares. And we spoke about the difference between Tierney and Tavares as to where they operate on the pitch. That inside left channel towards the opposition box. And we were saying there's no way Tierney would be in there. Whereas Tavares was, and some nice play brought about that goal for Saka. So I'm not sure it's completely out of his wheelhouse to be in there.
No, I think that's one of the positive things he brings, for
and
sure.
And then at 30 minutes and 50 seconds, he tries to play a pass down the line to Martinelli. The pass is intercepted. Like, it's not a simple pass, but not a particularly difficult pass, but nor was it anything particularly, it wasn't like a huge mistake. That was 30 minutes and 50, and at 31 minutes and 6, you can see on the TV footage, decision has been made. Tierney whips off his bib, and he's ready and waiting to come on for the sub, which takes another few minutes. So, on the rewatch, like, I don't think Tavares was so bad that he had to make the change at that point. I really don't see what was so awful about his performance. Now, I'll happily concede the fact that I've got no idea what Mikel Arteta was saying to him, whether he was instructing him to do things and he wasn't doing it. That would make it a bit more of an understandable decision from Arteta. If Arteta is telling him one thing and he's doing something else, then that's an explanation that we're not privy to. But based on what I saw, like, It wasn't the kind of performance where I was thinking, got to get this guy off. Like, this is an absolute disaster. I didn't see that at the time. I didn't think he was good. I didn't see it at the time, and I certainly didn't see it on the rewatch. And I just wonder if that was a decision that could have been made at halftime, albeit, like I said, there could be stuff that we don't know, and I'm only basing this on what I saw on TV.
It's so interesting, and I guess it's a little bit about TV versus live.
Because
I'll admit, I was sat kind of behind Arteta on that side of the pitch, and I was thinking, this guy's having a nightmare.
Wow.
Yeah. And I think some of my colleagues in the press were of the same mind based on the conversations I had at halftime. And I, like I say, I wasn't surprised when it happened.
Right.
Now, is that bias because both I and Mikel Arteta are on that side of the pitch, watching him most closely? You know, if that was Cedric in front of us, would we have been saying, he's got to get off by that
maybe.
Point? It genuinely is, like, I wonder if Arteta and I will both review the tape like you and be like, do you know what? He wasn't that bad.
Mm.
But in the ground, and bear in mind, I'm also watching it through the prism of seeing what he does and seeing the manager's response simultaneously. I was thinking, this is edging towards a substitution. I do think there are a couple of other things worth saying about it. It's a really interesting topic. So the first is that Arsenal were playing very poorly at that point in the game. And when you look at the left-hand side of the team, you know, it was holding Nuno, Patino, sort of in the build-up part of the
that
pitch.
That triangle,
there.
Yeah.
And that was quite weak, I think, on the day. And when you look at the subs Arteta could make, Tierney, apart from Lacazette, Tierney was sort of the senior player who he could bring on to improve the team. If he was going to make a change, it kind of had to be Tierney or Lacazette. And I guess he thought Tierney could bring more balance. The other thing worth saying is that Steve Cooper, the Forest boss, in his press conference, he was sort of talking about the tactics of the game. And he said, you know, we had to make some adjustments at half-time because of Kieran Tierney. He said, based on what Tierney was doing, I had to adjust my team talk at half-time, which is interesting.
Surprising.
Because
I'm, yeah.
Yeah, well, I think it maybe Tierney was asked to come on and do something different. Maybe it was less about Nuno and more about doing something different. I don't know, but Steve Cooper did say that, which made me think, well, clearly there was something, some distinction in what they were offering.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, I always feel sorry for a player in that context. It's deeply embarrassing.
It is, yeah. And it's one of those where, because it's happened before halftime, even being taken off at halftime is a bit chastening, to be honest. Like, if there was a real obvious lack of effort on his part, I'd understand. And we might as well make the point as well that when Nuno had a couple of bad moments in a game, was it? It was a game against Liverpool. He gave the ball away.
Gave the ball away. Arteta kept faith with him.
There was an iffy one against
United.
Yeah, and he kept faith. You know, so he's had, I think he's had worse moments than he did in this game. Like the back pass to Leno was casual and not great or anything like that. And it was quite eye-catching. But, you know, Arteta has kept faith with him when he's had some difficult moments in the past. But it is one of those where when you're taken off before halftime, there are questions. What does this mean? Like he was fairly keen to stress afterwards. He was just trying to improve the team. And I think, you know, your point about what he had available to him in order to change the performance is a good one. Like, it was Lacazette, then you have to take Patino off. And, like, that's even worse when you've given an 18-year-old a debut and you pull him off after, you know, 35 minutes. That's no good either. Maybe Nuno, as a more experienced player, not hugely, but, you know, has got more under his belt than Patino, would be able to compartmentalize this a little more easily, even if he was obviously very frustrated by the decision, threw his gloves down and all the rest. But, you know, he might have been frustrated at himself, at the decision. You know, you don't want a player coming off after 35 minutes and just going, okay, you know, it's understandable that they're upset.
I agree with you on that. I think it could be as much with himself as anything else. That's just to say, I think that the back pass is a red herring. Like, my perception in the ground was that it was sort of a general carelessness. That was the word, actually, a carelessness.
Wow.
I
didn't see it. I didn't see it on the rewatch. Like, there was no horrendously bad pass that he made. There were a couple of 50-50s where the ball got away from him, a couple of passes, you know, where maybe he could have done a bit better, but they weren't so terrible that you're going, oh, that's just meat and drink kind of stuff. And I was sort of looking at the stats. I think he made more interceptions than any other Arsenal player, despite only playing half an hour. You know, he had three interceptions and a clearance. It wasn't like he just was ambling back and not trying. So I do feel for him a little bit. You know, like you, when it happened at the time, I was like, okay, you know, a manager has to make the decision he thinks is the right decision for the team and then deal with the consequences for a player. And, you know, this is something that could easily be sorted out with a conversation on the bus on the way home today at the training ground, whatever it might be. You know, he can say, look, I showed faith in you earlier in the season yesterday, just needed to make this change, didn't really work out, but, you know, I had to do something that I thought was the best thing for the team. You know, we put it behind us, we move on, we work hard, et cetera, et cetera. So it remains to be seen if there's any real fallout, but I do think it was just, it's one of those that's always a talking point when a player gets taken off before halftime.
Definitely. And I think, you know, the manager's making a decision live in the moment, aren't they? And when you are in that environment, your perception is different and it's affected by all sorts of things, proximity, emotion. And maybe that factored in. And like I said, maybe he'll review the tape and be like, oh, that was incorrect. I wonder, it's all about the response, isn't it? It's all about what follows. I had slightly, when Nuno threw his gloves down, I was like, oh no, don't do that.
Yeah.
Just because I remember Mesut Ozil doing it, you know, to Freddie Ljungberg. And Arteta, what we know about Arteta is he's not the kind to sort of take to that sort of public show of dissent particularly well.
Yeah, but as a manager, when you're making that kind of a decision, you have to, you can't ignore how a player feels, even if you feel like that is the right decision.
Absolutely.
You know, he needs to put himself in the shoes of a player and think about how he would feel if
any
that
player,
happened to
I think
him.
Would,
yeah, exactly.
Might do that.
Exactly.
To be honest.
You know, he didn't throw the gloves at Arteta. He just threw them on the ground. It wasn't like he, you know, kicked fucking things all over the place, threw it, took his shirt off, threw his shirt down. They're gloves. You know, at the end of the day, it's a very, very insignificant show of frustration at the decision, his own performance, the team performance, whatever it might be. It doesn't, it's not a huge deal, I don't think.
Honestly, it wouldn't blow my mind if Nuno played on Thursday. It wouldn't blow my mind. Just because there is precedent in terms of, you know, wanting to give him another chance. I know this is a more severe situation, but yeah, I wonder.
Well, look, Tierney came on. I'm not sure he made that much difference. The second half was pretty soporific. Lots of possession, not a lot of movement. Plenty of Nottingham Forest behind the ball. You know, a lack of urgency, a lack of drive, a lack of pace, intensity to our performance, particularly on the ball. We made a change, brought Lacazette on for Patino. Odegaard dropped into central midfield. I wonder if, you know, I thought maybe that was a change he could make at halftime, but it didn't make a great deal of difference when we made it at whatever, 65, 70 minutes anyway.
Mm. Just an interesting point on that, by the way. You know, I spoke about Arteta being sort of visibly frustrated with players.
Yeah.
And it was every possible expression of frustration that you can imagine.
Every time the cameras were on him, he had like the face of thunder, or he was shouting at someone or looking cross about something, you know, so.
But the point I was going to make was that Patino was the exception to that.
Right.
As far as I could see. So I do think that there was a measure of understanding about the context within which he found himself. And again, maybe that played into the decision not to remove him. I don't know. As well as the lack of alternatives.
Mm. So what about the Nottingham Forest goal?
You'll have to remind. Is it Sambi who loses the ball in the field? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Sambi played the kind of Thomas Partey role within the midfield. He was the deeper of the two. He was sort of on his own a lot of the time. Patino was playing pretty high, as Xhaka has been doing recently. And I thought that he struggled, Sambi.
He struggled to do much with the ball, but I don't think he was particularly, careless with it or anything like that. I think he finished the game with 93% pass accuracy, you know.
That's pretty decent. I guess it depends what those passes are doing, you know.
I know. He didn't have a lot around to work with. Like, I think there was, you know, if I imagine him in this game, it's basically him just in front of the back four with Nottingham Forest players in front of him and not much around him to try and get the ball forward, you know.
Yeah. So it's his concept. He plays a pass, it's cut out. Guy springs into the space behind Tierney.
Holding is not good, is he? He's not good. No. He doesn't even try and block the cross. Cedric is caught too high upfield when the ball is turned over.
Yeah, we're just massively caught out. And as I said, I felt watching the game like that was a risk, you know, that they are actually a strong counter-attacking team. That's their style. And they nailed it on that one. And we were... Well, I'll be honest. My main emotion, actually, was sort of like... I wasn't that deflated when they scored. I honestly was like, thank God I don't have to watch extra time. Look, I have to be honest about that.
I wasn't looking forward to extra time, and I don't think we necessarily needed extra time given what we've got coming up. But, you know,
yeah.
I still didn't like the goal at all.
Oh, listen, now, I would have liked to win the game.
Of course.
But, yeah, I mean, I'm just watching it again now. Cedric tries to get back, but he's never getting there, really, is he? Maybe Ben White should have a bit more awareness of grabbing behind him. I don't know. It's a very good cross as well.
It is a good ball in, to be fair. Yeah. It is a good ball in. It's a difficult one for the second central defender more than the first central defender, which is Holding. I think Holding should do more in his role when he's chasing down the man down the right-hand side. You know, at least make some attempt to block the cross, which he doesn't do at all. I guess
my point is when we give the possession away where we do there on the pitch, you're in trouble basically because Arsenal have got 1, 2, 3, 4 men ahead of the ball. Cedric's up by the halfway line. Tierney's up by the halfway line. It's basically just Holding and White behind the ball.
Yeah.
And it's sort of 2-on-2. And so, yeah, it's a really silly way to get caught. I found Arteta's post-match interview really confusing, I have to be honest. So we were the...
Tell me.
Well, normally it's Zoom, right? But because it's Forest and in Football League, the rules are different. We had a kind of a post-game kind of huddle. And he was asked about the performance and his reaction. He said he's very disappointed. And then he said, not with the attitude. He very clearly said, not with the attitude.
I noticed then, that, yeah.
Yeah, and then he said... I'm going to try and get up what he said because it was very pointed, not with the attitude, but with how much purpose we have and determination to change the game.
Is that not tied with attitude?
I mean, that's what confused me, I'll be honest. And I was sort of scratching my head being like, that's partly attitude. And I've been thinking about it for ever since, really, and trying to figure out what he meant. And I think what he meant is like, it wasn't the effort, but the... intent. And I know what he means. It like our use of the ball was just pretty bad on the day, and even if there was effort there, I mean, I'm sure people would like to see more effort, but it was much more about quality and execution, it seemed to me anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to know sometimes when a team is that looks that lethargic, you know, what the real reason is, or why is it so different from the way we played? And look, clearly there are some personnel issues. There are some players missing or players who would play who weren't there. Some players who are better than some of the players that we had out there last night who would make a difference. I think that's fair.
Oh, yeah, plenty.
But I go back to what I said earlier, that the players that we had out there should have been capable of more than we got from them. And look, you can have a bad half. You can go in at halftime. I think I said at halftime on Twitter, you know, he needs to get the hairdryer out a bit here. But if the manager can't elicit a performance or an improvement from his players based on what he's seen in the first half, like surely he was very clear about what the problem was at halftime. Like he thought it was so bad he had to make a change before the break. Right, that's how much he felt the team needed to change. So what was it at halftime that he instructed them to do differently that they just didn't do or couldn't do or wouldn't do, whatever way you want to put it? Yeah. You know, it's a poor day for the collective, a poor day for certain individuals, but also I think a poor day for Mikel Arteta because, you know, we're hopeful. If we're being optimistic, we can talk about a top four challenge. Not if we play like that, but, you know, I think we're hoping that maybe we get a couple of players in, maybe the AFCON players come back and we can just pick up and go between now and the end of the season. And if we finish top four, I think people will be delighted, and rightly delighted about that, because we'll be back in the Champions League. It's an improvement and all of that kind of stuff. However, I find it frustrating that we have gone out of a competition which presents a chance of silverware, a chance of a trophy, a chance of, you know, success. I know some people will scoff at the FA Cup, but, you know, there are only three trophies for us to play for this season. The Premier League, we're not winning that. The Carabao Cup, we still have a chance. But the FA Cup was one that we should be taking seriously. And I don't think that the pursuit of top four, it's not an either-or situation for me. It's not like, well, we're out of the FA Cup and now we can concentrate on the top four. Or we're still in the FA Cup, there's no way we can get into the top four because, you know, we're now dealing with too many fixtures. I don't think it works like that. You know, I think the players, the manager, I'm sure are all hugely disappointed about going out of this competition. Fans should be disappointed with the fact that we're out and the manner in which we've gone out. So the sort of post-game rationalization that, well, maybe it's not a bad thing for us to be out of the FA Cup because we won't have those extra games. I don't buy that at all. I think you want to win as many games as you can. You want to build and create momentum. So all in all, I think it's one of the most disappointing days of the season so far.
Oh, I think it definitely is in terms of the quality of the performance. I think I would love to be in the FA Cup. I'd love to be in the fourth round. I'd love to go far into the competition. I also think on the other side of the coin that it may not be the worst thing for a squad that looks thin in certain areas to not have that competition. But that's not what I wanted, to be absolutely clear on that. I do think that as bad as the performance was, the reason I think it's worth discussing in isolation is I genuinely think when you look at the starting 11 that played, I think it has more parallels with the 11 that played against, say, Brentford than it does the 11 that played against Manchester City.
Sure, I agree with that, yeah.
You know, like for Balogun making his debut, see Patino. You've got White not with Gabriel in there with someone who's not at the same quality. Leno instead of Ramsdale. Cedric, you know, as we had Chambers at Brentford. No Partey, no Xhaka, no Lacazette, no Aubameyang. I think put some of these players back in this team and the performance would have been markedly improved.
Mm.
But that doesn't take away from the fact that I do think that this 11 was perfectly capable of beating Forest if they played to their potential, and they fell well short of that. The only other thing in terms of like the attitude that I wondered is, do you think the rearrangement of the fixtures and the fact that we have this undoubtedly massive week ahead of us now with two Liverpool games and a Spurs game all tied together, do you think that may have been in anybody's minds going into the game?
I mean, maybe, but it's the manager's job to focus them on the next game. And the next game, as he always says, is the most important game. So, like, if you're thinking about a week when you're going to play Liverpool and then you're going to play Spurs, I think that's perfectly normal. But if you want to play in those games, if you want to stake a claim for a place in the team, you know...
Well, I don't think anybody did that.
No.
Really?
No. So that's the other side of that. So
I wonder as well, by the way, just on the subject of this, obviously we don't have European football this season. And I do wonder if that might contribute to some of the substandard performances we're seeing from the second string. You know, it's not like this back four have been playing every week in the Europa League and have built up an understanding, or it's not like they come into the game with a great deal of match sharpness. They are really cobbled together for this cup game. And I wonder if that was a factor too, because they were very disjointed.
No, I think it is. I mean, Sambi hasn't played much in the last few weeks, and you might question whether we could have given him some minutes here and there. Patino, you know, as we've spoken about already, Nuno hasn't played a great deal in the last few weeks.
Cedric,
quite rightly, hasn't played. So, yeah, look, that is a factor. Eddie, another one who really hasn't played very much at all this season, apart from the last couple of weeks. And even then, it's been, you know, patchy little bits and pieces of football. Mm. So, yeah, I think... that obviously played a part, but it doesn't really excuse the performance.
It helps explain, but it doesn't excuse. It was very, very poor performance.
It was very poor. All right. Let's leave it there for part one, Mui. I'm sure we have questions that we can deal with. So
hopefully they're not about the game. That'd be good.
Yeah, I'll scour Twitter and Discord for robot dog questions and see what we can find.
Okay, nice.
All right, we will take a break. We'll come back with more in part two right after this.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to part two of the Arscast Extra. This is the part of the show where we answer questions that you send to us on Twitter at GunnarBlog and at ArsBlog, and also on the ArsBlog Discord chat server, which you get access to if you are an ArsBlog member on Patreon. James, would you like to go first?
Oh, okay. Yeah, let's go first. Thank you very much for that.
You're welcome.
Amongst all. So this question is from MASK on the Discord. And they say, amongst all the crapness yesterday, it felt like there was one specific cog missing that caused the slow play. Who did we miss the most yesterday? And he says, I personally think it was Ramsdale not hounding the team from the back.
Mm. I think probably Thomas Partey, based on the way he's played for the last couple of weeks. And in that role, picking the ball up off the back for the ability to burst between the lines and thus have Forrest turned around and running back the other way rather than sort of sitting in and just facing an Arsenal team that didn't have the craft or the guile to open them up with precision passing. I think Partey is the obvious one for me.
Yeah, I think it's one or, to be honest, there's a few you could choose. I thought of Gabriel for his distribution. I thought of Partey, absolutely. Xhaka maybe in terms of his balance. I think I would say Partey. I just think the shortfall between what Thomas Partey is able to do when he's given the ball, with his facing his own goal with two markers on him, and what Lokonga is currently able to do in that situation, I think there is a gap there. Understandably, given the player's ages and experience, and I think that we missed that, his ability to bring those kind of vertical passes to our game. So, yeah, it was him, and it might be him over the next few weeks.
Yeah. Okay, here is one from the Discord as well. JMart91, who says, do you worry that going out of the FA Cup this early may have an impact on our young squad going into another semi-final, or could it give them the kick up the backside and determination to reach the energy drink final?
I think it's funny, isn't it? There is a general sense of optimism around the club. I think there is a big positive vibe, and that continued despite the City defeat. But we have now lost 2 from 2 this year. The fixture list doesn't get any easier. I don't think it will affect them dramatically. I'm optimistic it will be quite a different team. I think Arteta will go quite strong against Liverpool. Do you?
I think so. I mean, we had a question here on Twitter from Zach, who's at ZachGooner23, who says, assuming we don't sign a midfielder in the next week, how do you expect our midfield to line up for both Liverpool and Spurs? I think he's going to go strong in both these games.
I think the fact that Lacazette didn't start and Tierney didn't start for Forest, the fact that Smith Rowe and Tomiyasu were left at home when I think, from what I hear, in a pinch they could have played, I think that tells you that he's really looking at these Liverpool and Spurs games and going to go, you know, obviously he'll go strong for Spurs, but I think he's going to go strong for Liverpool too.
On midfield?
Midfield, I mean,
depends entirely on Xhaka.
If Granit Xhaka can do 2 negative tests on day 6 and day 7, we asked Arteta about that, and he said the thing he always says, you have to see how he evolves. but we don't know what day he went down with it. You know, he was absent from training for 2 or 3 days. I think he was absent from training on the Wednesday. So he's been missing for a while. So he has to have a chance.
I could be wrong, and you might know better than me. Is there some difference between the isolation period if you're vaccinated and not vaccinated in the UK now?
I don't think so. I don't believe so. I thought there was, but I believe that the rules for vaccinated and unvaccinated people, and we don't know Granit Xhaka's vaccination status at this point, but are the same in that you have to provide a negative lateral flow test on day 6 and day 7 to get out after 7 days and so on. You need 2 consecutive days negative tests to be allowed back to work out of isolation. So that's what it will come down to, I suspect. If you don't have Granit Xhaka, I don't personally think you can put Charlie Patino in an Anfield.
No.
I don't think that would be fair. So then I think you're talking about rejigging it. I've got a question about that, so we'll come on to that. In terms of the young squad, I don't think this game has to have a massive hangover. And if we have seen anything from this group, it is that ability to kind of bounce back from relapses that has been quite characteristic of them. I mean, it's a very it's not a cozy fixture going to Anfield and hoping to do that.
No.
And then into a white hot North London derby. But yeah, there you go. Well, do you think it will have repercussions?
You'd like to think. Yeah, I mean, you'd like to think that they would respond in a positive way to being just so abject. Collectively and individually, they will want to put it right for, you know, professional pride reasons, if nothing else. Like, you don't want to play like that away from home in the Premier League, because you will get absolutely, you'll get ruined if you play like that. So, it doesn't have to, and it could be a situation where efforts are redoubled and everything else. It's just that it gives you this nagging doubt, doesn't it, in the back of your mind when they play like that. It's like, oh God, I know we've been good and we've played well, and then every so often there's a performance like this that just sort of chips away at some of the renewed confidence you feel. So it's about how they respond. There's no reason why it should absolutely flatten them or anything like that. So let's see how.
I think it maybe does more damage to our confidence than theirs. You know, a lot of it is.
Yeah, maybe so.
Narrative. Like, we could play 8 different players on Thursday and lose, and as fans, we'd probably go, well, I think the Sunday loss is part of that. But, it's very difficult for us to know what effect it actually has. Just on the midfield question, there was a question here about Nick Caprara. That would be a turn up for the books. And he mentioned a play. He said, Callum Chambers started the season as first choice right back and has played defensive midfield before. What has happened to a player who seemed to be a vital squad member where he now can't get on the pitch ahead of Kolasinac in the 90th minute?
That is a very good question. And that's actually something that I meant to talk about in the first part of the show, the Kolasinac thing. So we'll talk about that now in a second. Chambers, I'm not really sure. I think we've said this before, haven't we, that when you look at what Tomiyasu has done and how he does it, the next obvious option in terms of right back is Callum Chambers, because he kind of plays in the same way. He's the same physical profile. He is a central defender, really, who could provide, I think, a better option at right back than Cedric. But maybe there's something going on we don't know. He's out of contract in the summer, although that doesn't seem to be an issue for Lacazette, for Nketiah at the moment. I've got no idea what's happening there. As for Chambers in midfield, no, I don't think so, unless you've got absolutely nobody else for Thursday. If Xhaka isn't going to make it, for example, and you don't want to move Odegaard back, and I think that would mean Lacazette maybe at the number 10 if Smith Rowe isn't back. You'd have to play Nketiah or Balogun or somebody like that. But unless you're absolutely stuck, I don't see Chambers as a midfield option. He's never played in midfield for Arsenal, and I don't know why that would change going into a Carabao Cup semi-final unless there was absolutely no other option available to the manager. So I think he might have different options. Can I come back to the Kolasinac thing, though?
Yeah, sure. Just on the Chambers thing.
Yeah.
I know you say, like, unless we don't have other options, but is that not sort of the boat we're in?
It might be. I mean, yeah, but maybe there are other ways of doing it. If Smith Rowe is available, you could play Odegaard alongside Sambi, with Smith Rowe ahead, Martinelli on the left, Saka on the right, and Lacazette up front, I guess.
It's interesting. I would probably rather Chambers than
no,
that.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because I think the task for the first leg at Anfield, given that all their players are miraculously back, is to very much be in the game, coming back to the home leg.
Yeah.
And I think going with Odegaard and Smith Rowe, say, alongside Lokonga, I just have visions of us being absolutely monsters.
Okay, but let me put this to you then. Put this to you, sir.
Yeah.
We spoke about players who haven't played a great deal coming in
being below par. Yeah.
So, A, you're asking Callum Chambers to come in and play his first minute since fuck knows when. When's the last time Callum Chambers actually played?
He came on and scored, didn't he, in the League Cup? I think that might have been the last time. Or maybe in the League Cup game after that he came on as well.
I'm just going to look this up.
He hadn't started since the Man City game, I think.
Right, so
August.
Callum Chambers' last appearance was in October against Leeds.
And yeah, came on and scored, wasn't he?
Before that, he played in the second round of the EFL Cup, which was in August. And then the last time he played in the Premier League was the Man City game on the 8th or 28th of August. So,
yeah.
A, you're asking a player who hasn't played to come in and then play out of position at Anfield. To me, that's much more. We're more likely to get monstered with Chambers in midfield, given those circumstances, than we are with slightly rejigging the setup. albeit I acknowledge that maybe Odegaard and Sambi isn't quite the physical partnership you might want in midfield, but I just think when you look at who's playing, who's got the minutes, who's got the match sharpness, the match fitness, I don't see any way that you can make a case for Callum Chambers.
No, and I agree with that when you make the point about lack of minutes. I think that's true. I think I more mean that in a squad where I'm not convinced by Cedric and we're so short on midfield options, I don't quite understand his complete exclusion. And if he had a few more minutes under his belt,
I agree.
It'd be something I'd be considering.
I agree. I'd much rather Chambers than Cedric at right back, like by some distance. And I know he's a bit flawed there, but maybe it's a matter of personal taste or whatever. But for me, I would prefer Chambers. Can I now come back to the Kolasinac thing?
You can now, yeah.
Thank you. What did you make of that substitution? Because, we're a goal down. There's 4 minutes left. You don't want to go out of the competition. Your options are relatively limited, but you've got a young striker on the bench in Beerith. You've got Omari Hutchinson on the bench, a really tricky young winger. If the Kolasinac for Cedric substitution was a not-so-subtle message to the board to say, look at what I've got available to me when I'm in this position in a game, That point could be made the very same way by just throwing on one of those young attacking players, and you've got at least an outside chance, a very, very slim chance of them doing something, producing something. Do you remember a few years ago in the Carabao Cup where, I presume it was Arsene Wenger, threw on a then extremely young Eddie Nketiah, who scored with his first touch from a corner? You know, why didn't he just have a go with one of those young attacking players rather than stick on Kolasinac, who's got no future here and could offer you nothing from an attacking sense? I just do not get that substitution at all.
It was a weird one. I mean, in the build-up to it, you could see Arteta looking at his bench and talking to his assistant, and there was a lot of sort of head scratching and arm waving and uncertainty as to what to do. I think when they brought Kolasinac on, they actually switched the system. I think they went to three at the back at that point and played with wing backs to sort of match Forrest up in that last 5 minutes. I mean, it didn't work at all. For whatever reason, Kolasinac is considered part of the group at the present time. I mean, there was some thought given to him starting this game. So, yeah, I do find that odd. But it is a weird one. I sort of forget he still plays for us. And then there he is.
Yeah.
Earning quite a lot of money.
Yeah, well, look, it is what it is. But just in the context of the game and the scoreline and what we needed to do, it just didn't make any real sense to me. Beyond it being like a, look, here we are in this situation and all I've got is Kolasinac. Whereas
yeah,
I think if
and
you
I
throw
feel
on
like
a
he's done
seven,
things like that before.
Yeah, but if you throw on a 17-year-old winger who doesn't make any difference, it's the same message, you know?
True. I guess I just think, I don't think any of his options were great, basically. Beyond Tierney and Lacazette.
Yeah, but he chose the worst one. to my mind, anyway, he chose the worst one, but there we go.
Yeah.
Is it my question or your question? Okay. Is it? Who is it?
I don't know.
I don't know either. I had a question here that I wanted to ask you.
I've got one here if you want.
Go on.
Ben Lawton, who's at Frere Shaka. Very nice. Frere Shaka 1. Does the result yesterday change your thoughts on what needs to be the transfer priority?
Not really. Because I think it's a striker, to be honest.
I still think that as well. I've actually taken a load of stick on Twitter. You won't believe it for saying that this morning. But I think I still think that is the one.
Yeah, me
if
too.
I had to choose, and you don't have to choose.
No,
but
we could
you
do
did
both.
Have to.
Yeah, I in the very short term, we're very, very light in central midfield. No two ways about it.
Yeah.
However, you know, when Partey is back from the AFCON, which is in a couple of weeks, all being well, he stays fit. The Partey-Xhaka partnership, I know people have their issues with Xhaka or whatever, but, you know, as a first-team partnership, I think it's pretty good. Not to say it can't be improved or anything like that, but then you've got Sambi in reserve. You've got Odegaard, who can play in there a little bit as well if you absolutely need to. It's still not as deep as I would like, and we don't have enough options. But I just do not see how we get top four without a striker. I don't see how we score the goals at key moments in big games, in important games, when maybe we don't play well. We don't have enough goals and we don't have a striker. I just don't see any top four team that doesn't have a striker. And people will be saying, well, Manchester City don't have a striker. Yeah, but Manchester City have a hugely expensive assembled cast of some of the best players in the world, so their goals are spread around. We don't have that. We've got some promising young players, and I like what Saka's been doing of late, Martinelli, Smith Rowe, all of that kind of stuff. But if we're really, really serious about going for top four, about trying to hang on to this top four position or even consolidate that top four position, if you ask me right now, I would hang on the couple of weeks with my fingernails waiting for Thomas Partey to get back, and I would go with a striker. That would be my choice. Ideally, I think we need both, you know, but if you're making me choose one or the other, and I'm talking about, when we say one or the other, the right player, in inverted commas, the, you know, not just any striker, not just any central midfielder, but we're talking about the right signing. For me, it would have to be a striker, because we've got a lot to do between now and May to get into the top four, and we don't score enough goals, and we don't have enough threat up front on a consistent basis to do that. So for me, I would take a striker.
Yeah, I thought that before the game, and it doesn't change it for me.
Mm.
We look... The funny thing is, in the short term, we look more desperate in midfield than in attack. But between now and May, I think the greater need is for a striker.
Yeah, I agree.
We're already in the mess with the midfield situation. We're in the time where it's really tricky. And the reality is, we'll be out of it probably in a few weeks. It won't be perfect, but it won't be nearly so bad. The striker situation is one that is, you know, is ongoing. And I think that makes that the priority. Mm. I also think, when you talk about midfield, you know, what are we talking about getting in? If we could get a really quality player who could really be a sort of long-term contributor, like, what I don't want us to do is fall into the trap of like desperation signings.
Mm.
I touched on this today in my piece, but
I haven't had a chance to read yet.
When you look back, we have made some sort of short-term emergency signings in January's in the past. Kim Källström started one Premier League game.
Mm.
Denis Suarez started no Premier League games. Cedric and Pablo Mari came in on loan in January, started three games apiece.
Yeah.
All of those signings have been long-term, of no great benefit. And it's sort of an insurance policy, but it doesn't really do anything. And in some cases, you get lumbered with a player in the longer term that you don't really want.
Yeah.
And I don't... obviously, you get exceptions like Martin Odegaard, where he was available in January and it made loads of sense. If something like that comes up, of course, you do it. But I don't think there's much to be gained from signing a guy because the next few weeks look really tricky. I think, unless it's the right person...
I agree.
That's not worth it.
I agree. But they've got to have targets, and they've got to have, like, it is the availability of the targets. You know, it's not like they don't know who they would want to bring in. It's just whether you can get them. I mean, if you can, let's say, there was talk of Wijnaldum on loan from PSG, and I've got no clue as to how credible that is or anything else. But just looking at that as the kind of short-term deal you could do right now, that would make some sense because you're not tying yourself into a four-year deal for a player as average as Cedric or Pablo Marie, you know what I mean? And this, I think there's more to those deals when people look back in them and who was involved in them, you know, than meets the eye. But, you know, you're right to say that we cannot allow ourselves to, you know, to lose sight of the recruitment strategy, which has, for the most part, worked really well.
Yeah. But I also, if there is a short term one that makes loads of sense, of course I'm not crazy. I wouldn't not do it. And what I hear about the midfield targets is that they absolutely do exist, and the problem they're having is they're not people that it's easy to convince clubs to part with halfway through the season. Which is a good thing. You know, you don't want players that people are generally happy to part with, but it presents an issue. The striker thing. In a way, I wonder if like it's as clear as this. We have to get a striker in January, or Aubameyang has to be welcome back into the group
That's
on his
exactly
return.
It.
And we're very fortunate that we have that option as a fullback, I think.
Well, yeah, I mean, we hope we have that option as a fullback, depending True. On quite how contentious it has been or you know, whether any bridges have been built over the last few weeks, etc., etc. Like on paper, we have that option. I think you're right to say that if we cannot get a striker, we have to find a way to make peace, find some kind of truce, whatever it is, because, you know, he's not maybe the player he was, but he's still a top-class striker on his day.
Yeah.
Those days are fewer and farther between than they used to be, but, you know, what options do we have? Do people want to see Eddie there? I don't think so. Lacazette, I know, does some good work, but just does not score enough goals and doesn't take enough shots. Balogun is going out on loan. Maybe we have Martinelli there as an option too, but I think if they're looking, if they're serious, they must know who they want in the summer. There's probably, so everything is a risk. Everything's a calculated risk, but surely there is a benefit to trying to do what you want to do in the summer and doing it now in January. Again, it's tough to convince clubs to sell, but if it costs you a few extra million, that could come back to you in prize money from your final league position, from your Champions League revenue. If you get in there, that's the gamble that you kind of have to take. And if that player isn't a short-term solution, if he's somebody that you think is the long-term solution for that position and a key position in this team and any team, if it's a few extra million, then maybe that's just what you've got to live with. And over the course of their contract, over the course of their career, it becomes less of an issue where you think, well, 5 million, 10 million is a lot now, but in 4 years' time, maybe that money looks absolutely money well spent. Maybe that's money you also recoup if the player is somebody who at some point moves on somewhere else. You know what I mean? I'm not saying buy to sell or anything like that, but there are reasons why you could make a very good case for pushing the boat out this month to get the player that we need in that position.
Yeah, I agree. And one thing Arteta says that I think is always right is that you have to try and use every window to improve the squad, because you only get certain... every window is an opportunity. You know, Arsenal did 6 signings last summer. They would have liked to have done 8 or something. I think 8 was the number that they had in mind. But it's just not possible sometimes to do all the work you want to do in a window. And that's always going to be the case. So you've got to take every chance that you can to try and improve what you've got. Arteta's not had a window at Arsenal where they haven't signed somebody.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that does come from him and his desire to see the squad evolve. I think that's the right thing. And I hope that we will see something this window. Mm. I mean, I'm sure they'll try. And I think it will probably pick up a bit towards the end. But yeah, as for the very short term, you know, I've seen some people saying we need to get in a midfielder by Thursday or something like that. I mean, that's just not going to happen.
No, I don't think so. Even if you sign someone today, you know, by the time they arrive, settle in, train, et cetera, et cetera. It's just, you know, it ain't going to happen.
Likely.
Here's a question from the Discord from The Land. I like that. He says, does seeing Patino and Balogun struggle in the recent cup games, seeing Aziz struggle to break into a mid-table League One side, ever make you think how unreal Saka is? And I think that could be applied to Smith Rowe as well.
Yeah, I guess it does. I guess it does. I hadn't necessarily thought about it. I've become so accustomed to Saka excelling at senior level. And in fairness to him, it was pretty immediate. Like, he... Was it his first start in Frankfurt? And he scored a great goal from outside the box?
Yeah. Don't know if it was then his first start, but...
It was a very early one.
Yeah.
And then he had that run in the team as a left back. Was fantastic. Seems a long time ago now, but he was so good there that people were talking about that as his potential long-term position. He really did just hit the ground running. And I think, does it make me think about that? I think it makes me think more about the quality of under 23 football and the gap that exists between that and the Premier League. And I think someone like Saka and maybe Smith Rowe, although he did have loan spells along the way to help him in that development, I think they're the exception. I think that step up is very significant, and we're seeing that in some of these young guys.
Yeah, and I think it also reminds you that career trajectories are not linear.
No.
You know, that some players develop at a quicker rate than others. Some players need to get into their early 20s before they hit their stride. Some players are blessed, you know, with the ability to come in and be at the level at an age where, like, they really have no right to be. You know, we're talking about the best talents, though. I think, you know, if you look back at some of the players who played at a really young age for us, I mean, Cesc is another one, obviously, when you think about the impact he had at the age he had, not to mention the team that he came into. Like, he was holding his own with some of the best players in our history, you know, at 17. So it does speak a bit to the talent, but also you have to remember that players develop at different rates. And also, I just wonder, and I don't think this is necessarily true of Arsenal fans, but there is an element of expectation levels over young players being too high based on, you know, what we see on social media, based on a bit of buzz, you know, from under 23 games and all that kind of a stuff. And like you say, the step up is much bigger than people like to think. I think they expect that if you can do this playing against whatever, Wimbledon under 23s, you should be able to come in and do it against, you know, top teams in the Premier League. And it's not the case. I think Aziz is a really good case in point as well, where he's developing, he's learning, he's having to play against men. He's looked very good at youth level because he's playing against other young men. It was like Balogun on the opening day of the season. You know, you get battered around. So, it's a reminder of how good Saka is, how good Smith Rowe is, Martinelli is, you know, to come in and do what they're doing at their age and let the others just develop at their own pace.
Yeah, I completely agree with that.
All right.
Have you got any more there? Because I've sort of covered off most of mine.
Okay, here's a couple. Smithy NZ on the Discord says, many Arsenal fans are pontificating the possibility that we sign an opposition player who played well against us. Is Jed Spence the next Dani Alves and worth pursuing, or is it merely an outcome of us having a shit day at the office with a very young team wearing a Spurs kit?
He played really well. I have to say, actually, when the game started, I thought him and Nuno was going to be a really interesting battle because he was kind of Nuno-like, about 6'3", very broadly built, very powerful. He's there on loan from Middlesbrough, and the Forest fans loved his performance.
He was excellent. Yesterday. He really was excellent. Yeah,
yeah, he was really very, very good. I don't know about him in particular. I mean, why not? He's 21. He's someone worth thinking about. I do think that area, right back, is something that's surely going to be on the list in the summer in terms of getting someone who is a more adept backup for, for Tomiyasu.
Yeah, but there is that thing. Guy has one game. Sign him. Bring him in. You know, I do enjoy that. There was something I was going to ask you there. What were we just talking about? Jed Spence, Sloan. God damn.
Nuno.
The kit. What did you make it? What do you think of the kit?
I've got to be careful because...
Separate the kit from the initiative. The initiative is amazing.
The initiative is amazing. I'm not a fan of Arsenal playing in white. I have to say that.
I didn't really understand all the, oh my God, this is amazing. I think the initiative and everything that goes into that is absolutely fantastic. And I think the fact that we have raised awareness for such a good cause and all the rest of it is brilliant. But I just didn't like the kit. We look like kind of ghosts or something. Spursy. Well, yeah, goes without saying.
I mean, Roy Keane said they look like Real Madrid, but they're playing like a pub team. I thought that was quite a good line on ITV. I love the campaign, and I thought it was brilliantly executed, and the film Adidas made was great too. But I'm looking forward to seeing red and white again soon. What are we going to wear at Liverpool, mate? I love yellow. The blue kit. Oh, yellow. Yeah, could be.
We should wear yellow. The Herminator on the Discord says, is it time to bin the Kieran Tierney long throw? Hardly any of the players seem up for it. I mean, this is another one I don't really get. It's not really a long throw, is it?
It's the longest throw.
It's the longest throw we're capable of, but it's still not, it ain't fucking Rory Delap or anything like that.
No. Was there one against City where he went over to the right wing to do it?
Yeah, maybe so. Yeah.
There was one recently where somebody did that and I was like, oh, wow. Didn't realise it was that much of a thing. It's not panning out for us at the present time. I mean, our set pieces have been quite good this year, as we know. But long throw, still room for work on that one.
Yeah. Whose throw was I looking at recently? And I was thinking, that is a mad technique. Was it Trent Alexander-Arnold?
I don't know.
You've seen the way he throws the ball. He kind of, almost like, I don't know how to describe it, but he holds it in one hand, but then one hand is to the side and one hand is kind of behind the ball and he kind of shot puts it with both hands. It's a weird technique.
Well, they have
they've got a throwing coach. Mark
there, the throwing coach. Yeah. Maybe that's part of it.
Final one for today, Jensen Armour at Jensen Armour on Twitter says, what are your thoughts on Jurgen Klopp's comments on the many false positives that they had? Game probably should have been played. Bad due diligence from the EFL or economic with the truth from Liverpool?
I suspect some eyebrows have been raised within London Colney about that one.
You think?
I mean, they do happen. My wife lost a job to a false positive. It was very sad. She got a part in a film and then they turn up on the doorstep to test her. And it was one of those rapid flow tests and it came up positive. And we were like, hang on, that's weird. And we did like three more and they were negative. But
we have to take the first answer.
A lot of insurance companies have to take the first answer. And I wonder if the same occurs in football. What I would say is the incidents of those occurring are, as far as I understand it, relatively rare. So having a lot of false positives, I mean, it must have been a bad batch of tests. It is a curious one, I have to say. And I think it's this lack of transparency that's an issue. Yeah. You know, we don't know. We don't know how many player positive tests Liverpool had. We still don't know. Could be 10, could be 2. And we're in the dark there, as are Arsenal, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's dodgy as fuck, to be honest. Yeah. Like one false positive, okay, can happen, as you say, but a number or a lot of false positives?
Can we get some of these false positives to get us through the next couple of weeks till Thomas Partey's back?
Yeah, and then we just have a game every 2 days. It's perfect. It's perfect.
Maybe that's why Granit Xhaka's gone and got himself infected. He's going to be a super spreader.
He's just going to go around licking every other Arsenal player. And on that beautiful image, we will leave it there for this particular Arscast Extra. Thank you, as always, for being here. I think we're going to do one on Friday, aren't we, after the first leg of the Liverpool game. So fingers crossed we have a goodlier morning than we did today. Until then, take it easy. We'll be doing some stuff on Patreon in midweek, of course. Patreon.com/Arsblog. Until the next one, take it easy.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.